1 Samuel chapter 18, as we continue with the ongoing saga of God's work among Israel. And we have been through some very difficult times as we began with Judges, as we continued through into Samuel. God is preparing in some very unusual ways to glorify himself and his kingdom. And one of the things that he has done is first of all, allowed a king, like the nations, to rise up as head of Israel. The man Saul, through numerous occasions of disobedience, has forfeited his right to the kingdom. And unbeknownst to Saul, God has already inaugurated a kingdom and a king that will eventually overtake Saul's place. And that, of course, is that of David, who will become king. I wish we could go back and I could fast forward, kind of infuse your mind with what we left off 2 weeks ago, the last time I was with you, as we saw the great triumph of David over Goliath, the surprising way that God puts David into Saul's household, that amazing. And it was so much fun last week in North Carolina to preach that passage again and kind of learn from the way. A lot of times you preach and you go, oh, I wish I'd said this, I wish I'd done that. But it would get boring with me just continuing to preach the same sermon until it got as good as it could go, and then we'd go to the next passage. But last week it was just a thrill to go back, and the way I put it to them is to feel the sand between our toes and see the blood of Goliath running into the dirt. You know, it's just exciting stuff of David, of this relatively unknown king who is being raised up. So we come this week to what I'm calling David, the Loved and the Hated. We're going to see that this chapter is going to reveal to us how there is at the same time an increasing respect and love and desire for David and popularity, while at the same time there's a man who begins to boil with hatred and bitterness toward him. And we're going to look at David the Loved and the Hated. Basically, there are three thematic elements I want us to follow through chapter 18. The first surrounds the idea of the covenant. The second is a song. And the third is a wedding. And we're going to group these scenes or these episodes of David's life and his interaction with Saul, his interaction with Israel, under those three: covenant and song and wedding. Let's read this first section, just the first five verses. What happens? And we really have to go back to the battlefield, put ourselves there, see David go out, slay the giant, cut off his head. Then all of the Israelites run into the valley and up the other side. They go after the Philistines. They rout the Philistines and they have a great victory. We still have to feel the sweat and the dirt in our eyes from that battle as we come into chapter 18, and then we begin to read with verse 1. As soon as he had finished speaking to Saul, that is David, the soul of Jonathan was knit to the soul of David, and Jonathan loved him as his own soul. And Saul took him that day and would not let him return to his father's house. Then Jonathan made a covenant with David because he loved him as his own soul. And Jonathan stripped himself of the robe that was on him and gave it to David and his armor and even his sword and his bow and his belt. And David went out and was successful wherever Saul sent him, so that Saul set him over the men of war. And this was good in the sight of all the people and also in the sight of Saul's servants. So this is the first episode, the growing popularity and what will prepare the way for David to be hated by Saul. But we're introduced in this chapter that immediately after the battle, what takes place in David overcoming Goliath, him becoming a champion, is that we are reintroduced to the character of Jonathan, who is Saul's son. We last saw Jonathan back a few chapters ago, as he is this amazing, bold, courageous guy who has a zeal for God, who has a belief that God can do amazing things, and through Jonathan, God does amazing things. And so Jonathan at that time went to the back of the stage and kind of was doing his thing. And now in chapter 18, he steps to the front of the stage again, and he steps to the front of the stage because of his relationship with David. Now, as far as we know, there might have been some relationship that though we're not told at this point. Now, surely if David was in Saul's household playing the guitar for him, playing the harp, singing to him, Jonathan is also in Saul's household to some degree, coming to see his father. There may have been some relation, but that relationship was not that what we're told about that relationship is not based on that relationship, but on David's overcoming of Goliath. So we read that as soon as he had finished speaking to Saul, David is there, he speaks to Saul, Jonathan has seen David slay Goliath, and he is moved with admiration, he is moved with love, and some unusual things begin to take place. So we are told, and this is one of the rare times that this phrase is used in Scripture, and it's used multiple times in this passage, the soul of Jonathan was knit to the soul of David. And so the idea is taking two souls and intertwining them to the point that you can't pull them apart without damaging them both. That's the imagery. They are melded together. They are woven together. There is a love. There is a compassion, a passion for one another. And this, we're told, is moved by Jonathan. This isn't a mutual friendship that is being highlighted here, but Jonathan himself is moved with admiration. He sees David. He sees David's victory, and he does some very unusual things based on that. So he comes to him, verse 2, Saul took David that day, would not let him return to his father's house. We saw that previously. He'd go back between the king's house, his father's house. He said, no, you need to stick with us. You're the guy. You're obviously the champion. You believe in the Lord. You can do amazing things. You need to stick with us as we continue to fight. You can't go back to your sheep anymore. But then we're told in verse 3 that Jonathan made a covenant, literally cut a covenant with David, which probably included sacrifice, which probably included taking a sacrifice or sacrifices, cutting them in half, putting them each side, and walking through them, which was symbolic of, if I don't remain faithful to you, may that happen to me. May I be split in two and my blood shed if I don't remain faithful to you. That's the idea of the covenant. You can also see that back in the experience of Abraham. But he makes this covenant, he makes this promise. It is initiated by Jonathan. It is almost, it seems, unilateral in that he sees David and is moved in that direction. And he does this because he loves him as his own soul. But then he goes beyond that and does something also very important and very symbolic. In verse 4, we're told Jonathan stripped himself of the robe and the armor and the sword and the bow and the belt and puts it on David. Now, what does that mean? What in the world is that all about? It's a little awkward. Hey, David, I got something for you here. You know, start unbuttoning and put all this on. Well, remember, Jonathan is the successor of Saul. If Saul had not had the kingdom removed from him, Jonathan would be the next king. So he is the legitimate crown right heir of the throne of Israel had it not been taken from Saul. So what he is doing is, I see my right, so to speak. I see what I am supposed to be, but I am nothing before you. I take all of my rights and all that would come to me otherwise, and I'm going to put it on you. And it says Jonathan stripped himself, he gave it to David, and his armor and his sword, and there's no indication that David actually was wearing that, because I think had he come out of that tent with Jonathan's armor, Saul would have been stirred up a lot sooner, because that would be him vying for the throne. He comes out dressed as the king's son. He comes out and says, look at the new duds I have. He was saying that's a threat to the throne. But David doesn't do that. But Jonathan bows to David. He recognizes you are the rightful king. You are the next guy. When my father is off the throne, you're the guy who's going to take his place. You are the king of kings. You are the Lord of lords. So he makes this covenant. He gives him these things, and then Saul, we're told, David went out, verse 5, and was successful wherever Saul sent him, so that Saul set him over the men of war. This was good in the sight of all the people, and also in the sight of Saul's servant. So that's the first episode. This love, this admiration, this adulation being heaped from Jonathan. So the first guy that loves Jonathan, and watch this theme as we go out. There's going to be mention of hatred and fear, but there's going to be increasing numbers of references to people loving him. And the first person who loves him in this chapter is Jonathan. Jonathan loves David. Jonathan recognizes David, and we'll come back to that in just a bit. So that's the first episode. The second episode has to do with a song that is sung after they're out on that campaign, after Jonathan has made that covenant, and they come back to their hometown. So notice, let's look at verses 6 through 16 surrounding this idea of the song. As they were coming home, when David returned from striking down the Philistine, let me just pause to say, I believe that means striking down the Philistine and the campaigns that took place until they came back home, not they came back home and then went back out at this point. But as they returned from striking down the Philistine, the women came out of all the cities of Israel, singing and dancing to meet King Saul with tambourines, with songs of joy, and with musical instruments. So if you could picture that, the army is marching back. Here's the royal cavalcade coming into town, and they've got the women ready. And they're out there, and they start singing, they start dancing, start tapping the blowing the trumpets, the tambourines, they're dancing, and they've got a song. And listen, oh, they're singing. Let's listen to what they have to sing. And the women sang to one another, and they came out to meet the king. Here's Saul. But the lyrics of this song are going to be a bit shocking and very embittering to Saul. We read in verse 7 that they were singing, Saul has struck down his thousands, and David his 10,000s. Now there's probably more to that song, but that's what Saul remembered. So he comes back, here he is, he's already been cast down from the throne by God, Samuel has already left him, he's already had all these problems, he goes out, and his pride is now going to eat away at his heart like a cancer. All he hears is, David is being proclaimed as greater than me. Which probably is not actually accurate, it's probably more likely just poetic. But they're magnifying David. He has done amazing things. But it's more likely that cumulatively Saul has killed more Philistines and more men and more armies than David. But these folks are so in adoration and admiration for David. They create the song and it seems like a good idea to them. I know what? We'll give Saul his due. But man, this David, have you seen him? He's a handsome young guy. We've seen him out with the sheep. Even Goliath recognized, if you remember a couple weeks ago, even Goliath said, hey, there's a handsome guy. Well, the girls probably recognize that too. So they come out singing and dancing, and Saul, you're great, but David is so much greater. And not surprisingly, Saul hears the lyrics, he interprets the lyrics, and knows that words of songs mean things, and goes, wait a second. In verse 8, we read, Saul was very angry, and this saying displeased him. He hears this, and suddenly everything's, there's no indication at this point that David has anything other than good, or Saul has anything but good intentions toward David, and he's put him as a leader of some of the men. And Jonathan loves him, and everything's, but this simple song, and these two lines of this simple song changes everything. Everything. This song is repeated three times in this book. It's obviously something we're supposed to pay attention to. It's repeated later even by the pagans. This song will go down in history, and we're not going to forget it, and Saul will not forget it either. So he is angry. He hears this, but I want us to cast everything that we read here in the light of, and I'm going to try to defend this, that anger and that displeasure he keeps to himself all the way till chapter 19. And that's, I think, going to be important. He feels that inward bitterness, and he holds it in, and he doesn't let anybody know that he wants to undo David. Notice what it says. He says, they have ascribed to David 10,000s, and to me they have ascribed thousands. And what more can he have but the kingdom? Little does he know he speaks word of truth. David is on the rise up. Saul is on the way down. Saul doesn't like that. He doesn't believe what God said. God has said, I've already chosen a man who is after my own heart. And out of all of the guys, Saul ought to be able to identify that kid on the field with Goliath was the man after God's own heart. But Saul is rejecting God's word once again. He is rejecting the guy who's clearly going to be the king. His son even recognizes that he's going to be the king. But Saul will have none of it. He will not relinquish his place, his throne. So we're told then in verse 9, what more can he have but the kingdom? And Saul eyed David from that day on. And the implication, what was he eyeing him for? He wanted to kill him. He was looking for a way to kill him. But the problem with killing somebody who's popular is you're going to turn people against you. So at this point, he becomes very subtle. He's going to try to be careful, but we're going to see several traps and attempts that he makes on David's life. Meanwhile, saying, oh, what? Well, that was just accidental. So notice verse 10, we have this bothersome, troublesome, tormenting spirit that comes to Saul again. Verse 10, the next day, a harmful spirit from God rushed upon Saul. This is where he kind of loses his mind. He goes mad. And he raved within his house while David was playing the lyre, and as he did day by day. So the scenario is David goes back. They're at a time where they're not out on the campaigns. What's David going to do? He continues to minister to the king by playing the lyre, the harp. He continues to sing to him. And one day, as that's going on, Saul, this tormenting spirit, goes. He begins to rush and rave and become a madman and perhaps froth at the mouth. In verse 11, and Saul hurled, or we're told in verse 10, Saul had his spear in his hand. Saul hurled the spear, for he thought, I will pin David to the wall. And David evaded him twice. Man, what? Man, I'd love to see that in a good action. I mean, he just... David's like, whoa, like maybe a Matrix move or something. Just barely, wow, he evaded him. And then he does it again. He's like, oh, no, oh, here comes.